Hello, my friend.
Hey, how are you?
Great, how are you?
Doing all right.
I wanted to thank you for taking time to speak with me today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, man.
Wanted to ask you about the creative process for Dismal Swamp. How long did it take to put the material together?
There are a few songs that I've been hanging on to since, Sacred Dawn kind of went on a temporary hiatus, and I brought some of those back. But also John Vitale, who was on the first Sacred Dawn record, was back in the picture, and we both wanted to start working on stuff again. And it was kind of what brought Sacred Dawn back, to be honest, because I got really busy with the Skull, which is now becoming Legions of Doom. And then I was in Divinity Compromised as well. And I just, at that time, I just didn't really have enough time to put in the Sacred Dawn. A couple of the band members left. But when John came back, it kind of got me going, like, you know what? Let's start working on this stuff. So a few of them were some ideas that were already kind of, I was working on musically, just needed to complete the lyrical content. But the Dismal Swamp title kind of evolved around everything because of a poem I've been hanging on to since, gosh, I discovered the poem when I was like 19 years old, which was the Lake of the Dismal Swamp. And I always, I'd had some earlier version of music to the poem, but it just wasn't working. And I really felt like I didn't want to break up the poem, because lyrically it's a story.
Right.
And I, so that song in particular, I didn't change anything. I verbatim, as it was, as it's read as a poem, I wrote the music around it. And it kind of branched off and made everything else kind of take on the lyrical content. I mean, we've always kind of, we've had a, basically, I guess, political views behind a lot of our lyrical content, as well as some fantasies. And we'd, so we're like, you know what? Dismal Swamp kind of wraps up what we're kind of experiencing, I guess. I mean, everybody can say, oh, things are worse today than they were 30, 40 years ago. And I think a lot of that's all relative based on how much we're exposed to it.
Sure.
Media and social media has really put so much in our face constantly as it happens. We're back, sometimes we didn't hear about stuff for days, and it was a little less everybody at once, reacting to something. So I think there's a little bit of that to play into it, but things do seem kind of dismal, in different ways. And I think we can all say, we all have our own take on it, and it can be generalized. It doesn't have to take one side or the other. It's just how we view things. And so that really kind of made the rest of the song start to kind of take hold. And me and him started getting to work in 2020, because we did a single EP release called Contradiction before Dismal Swamp, to kind of just test the waters and go, hey, this is working. And I had the drummer from Divinity Compromise, Mike Musil, with us at the time, that was jamming with us. And so as these ideas started coming about, me and John would basically demo everything out. I played everything, John played the parts of the stuff either he wrote or he had ideas on, but in my head I already knew what I wanted. I mean, I played, the drums, I physically sat down, I got an electronic kit that I use, and sit down, play it, add everything else. And as these songs started coming together, we'd send them to the other guys to listen to, because we're in the middle of a pandemic. I was trying to be respectful.
Right.
So I was like, hey, I'll just send you the stuff, listen to it. If you got some ideas, we'll bounce back and forth. But otherwise, just kind of start getting familiar with these tunes as we send them to you. And when we're ready, we're going to get together, we're going to start tracking them. And so we did. We picked a few weekends, went to Mike's studio, set up the drum mics, and basically everything I walked into with pre-recorded scratch and guitar tracks, so that he could play along with me and I could stand and sit there and direct him, throughout the process. So we met together all one at a time and worked on the record, you know, making sure everybody's health was up to standards and all that. So, and yeah, we worked on this record over the course of 2020 to about 2022, getting the recording, tracking, and also the mixing done. So,
and you have to be very happy with the mix. It is.
Excellent. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. You know, we've used a couple of different, I typically end up tracking everything. Cause I've got my own studio set up, but I've had other guys mix it because I do get too close to it. Sometimes it's nice to have somebody with a different ear to go, but I still go, let's have a little more of this and I can give them some opinions. We'd worked with Chuck Machick in the past, but, an old friend of ours, Jerry Buchko, who also played in another band called Mind Warp Chamber and that we used to jam with early in, you know, back in the 2005, 6, 7, something like that. And he said, "Hey guys, who's mixing your record?" I'm like, "Well, I was going to do it." And he's like, "Hey, well, I got some cool analog gear that I've been obtaining." And some of it was stuff he got out of the Charlie Daniels studio. And
wow.
Had an old DDA analog board. He's like, "You want to have some fun and mix on analog gear?" I was like, "Yeah." I mean, it was kind of a no-brainer because, you know, it's no offense to how people mix, but it was like, you know, the idea that we could do this record and actually go into an analog world, even with digitally recorded tracks, you still do something to it when you run it through this gear. And I was really excited to dig into that and let Jerry put his hands in it. And, you know, he had some ideas. We all bounced back and forth. And so between me, John and Jerry, we got the mixing process done. And then we worked with John Scripp from Massive Mastering to master the record, which he's done a lot of the mastering for a lot of my other bands on Qumran Records, as well as he's done the mastering for the Skull since I've been in the Skull. And he's one of the local metal guys that we that does a lot of mastering, and he does a bang up job. So I'm happy. You know, we're always going to hear stuff and go, "Ah, God, I should have done that different." But in the scheme of how we had to do everything, I think organically it came. I wanted this record to seem a little bit more organic, I guess you could say, sounding wise. It just bring back the warmth, and I think we accomplished it.
And I think one track that really speaks to that is one of my favorite tracks, "One More Day."
Wow. Cool, man. You know, you are not the first person to tell me that that song strikes him. And I'm like, that's really cool. Thanks. I've been hanging on to that song for years. And I was just like, God, the right time is going to come when I feel like it's appropriate. And this was the record.
How did that track come to you originally?
Well, I'm a heavy duty 70s prog guy. So I've love all that stuff, you know, the Deep Purples, Uriah Heep, Styx, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And the melody just kind of came in one day, and I, you know, and this was years ago, and I kind of, you know, I went on a personal musical hiatus because I got myself involved with working as an engineer in television, and I just didn't have time to even do music for about 5 or 6 years. So this is one of the first things I started messing with whenever I started getting back into recording and writing again. So I would have been my late 20s. And I was just like, I don't know. It was always one of those songs. I'm like, is it heavy enough to be on a Sacred Dawn record? And none of the other bands it was appropriate for, like Divinity and stuff. I was like, you know, maybe I'll do it as a solo. But for some reason, I was able to come around and just say, you know what? I'm going to do it. I don't care. Screw it. If it's not heavy enough, you know, I wanted to do it. And I'm really, really happy to hear that people are liking it. So thank you.
And I think the placement on the album is perfect for it as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Just one more day for me to carry on before you enter the lake of the dismal swamp.
Mm-hmm.
There is a method to record order, and I, you know, and for you to notice that is, it means something, because I think a lot of people have gotten away from albums being the experience and more just listening to singles, which, you know, Spotify mixes it up if people have their settings on random and it's not going to play the record in order.
Right.
And I know people, a ton of people do that because they said, oh, it makes the experience different. It's like, yeah, but some records just scream being played in a certain order.
Sure.
And so we, yeah, we took pride in the fact that we laid it out the way we did. So, yeah.
Another one of my favorite tracks is Truth Be Told. I wanted to ask if you could speak on that track as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I think and I think we're living in it. You know what I mean? All of us are trying to decipher where we get our information from. And again, you know, without sitting and taking sides, which we purposely try not to do, because I think, you know, to leave something open for people to make their own interpretation is very important. I don't think we should necessarily be force-fed what we should think. I think we should be able to, you know, hopefully be educated enough to take the information we have and go, you know, something doesn't seem right about this, or, you know what, they're onto something. And the problem is that you got so many mockumentary type of write-ups and stories and programs that are coming out that sometimes people think are real.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when The Onion came out from Madison, it was like the Mad Magazine of, you know, The Inquirer. It was meant to be slapstick and funny and a joke and take on things. But some people take these little excerpts and run away with it. I'm like, come on. You know, use a little intelligence. But sometimes it's really tough because you can't just assume. It's like the email scams, you know, that poor person who's maybe in their 80s or 90s, not computer savvy, accidentally clicks on the wrong link and all of a sudden all their stuff's taken. I mean, it happens. So sometimes things slip through the cracks, and that's how these people become successful. They all it takes is a few people to get scammed. They don't need everybody to get scammed.
Right.
And if they get a few, then they succeeded. It's what's scary about what we live in, because, you know, we don't have 5 or 6 channels anymore like we used to back in the, you know, when TV first started to come about. Now everything's on demand. Everything's in your hand. And we just have to be smart enough to know, okay, I don't know if this is right. So Truth Be Told speaks very much all the way through our ability to look through the smoke screens, our own security, understanding what we're seeing and reading and interpreting. So that's exactly what it is.
And I also wanted to ask you about the album artwork and the artists involved.
Perfect. The artist that we chose to work with us on this was Gustavo Saez. He's done like Camelot, Firewind, but he also did the artwork for Inner Siege, which is one of the other bands on my label. And so when I asked Jeremy, the singer, I was like, who did your artwork? He told me and gave me his contact info. And I just reached out to him and said, hey, you know, I've been checking out your artwork. I said, I'd love to, you know, work with you on this. And so we spent 6 months going back and forth on the concept of building everything around the Lake of the Dismal Swamp theme. And what he came back with, I've gotten nothing but compliments on. So, yeah, he does great work.
I wanted to ask you as well if you could speak on your musical development. At what age did you begin?
4 or 5 years old. My father and mother both play multiple instruments. My mother predominantly taught me some piano early on when I was 4 or 5. My father taught me the recorder, which was what everybody learned in elementary, except I was learning it on a classical level at that age. And
wow.
Guitar really didn't start coming about until I was like 9 or 10 years old, because my dad had a classical guitar laying around. And so he used to practice this thing. Cause I love like Spanish flamenco style, and he had this one Carcassi piece that he used to do. So I started learning that, and it just kind of went on from there because I, you know, I loved bands like Yes and Beatles and stuff, and was kind of playing around with some of that stuff. It was right around the age of 9 or 10 when I really started listening to bands like getting exposed to Iron Maiden and Accepted. I started really more seriously looking at guitar, but honestly, I was originally thinking, oh, it'd be cool to be a bass player. Not too many people say that at the age of 9, I guess, but originally that's what I kind of thought because I love Chris Squire, you know, and his antics, yeah. You know, the wah wah and all the fuzz that he used to do. I just thought it was cool. But when I started really listening to more metal, I was like, "Yeah, those solos are pretty cool too." Iron Maiden, come on! I mean, you know, all the dual harmonies and stuff. Because I thrive on that stuff, and I always prefer working with other guitar players. I know there's some guys that are like, "I just want to play by myself." I'm not like that, and I really like having that other guitar player to kind of work off some of the other parts that I just can't cover live. So
yeah, I think Lizzie was a great pioneer as far as that aspect of that double guitar sound.
Yeah, you know, and then like Steve Harris has openly admitted that bands like Wishbone Ash were huge influences on how they did some of their songwriting. So it was like, so I even started listening to bands like that when I was younger, and I was like, oh man, you know, and I get it. I just love the dual harmonies and stuff, and there's so many things. Also Queen, I mean, the way Brian May layered his guitar stuff,
yeah,
to me it was just magical. So.
And along your musical journey, what do you feel has been the best advice that has been given to you along the way?
That's probably kind of tough because most of the people that I've worked with are usually the ones I gave up first. And I think maybe that was what did it, to be honest with you. You know, when I think back on, I remember a friend of mine, he was like, just talking about down the road, you know, we're all young, 12, 13 years old. He's like, what are you going to do? He's like, I'm going to be a musician. I'm going to be playing a band. It's like, oh yeah, I know plenty of people that say that. And then they end up working at McDonald's or doing some other corporate job. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. I don't feel that way. And they're like, hey, it'll hang up at some point. And it never did. And I think it's because he told me that.
Right.
But it's just in my blood. I mean, even to this day, my father still goes out and performs with woodwind ensembles and plays bassoon once in a while, and my sister's involved with the arts council of the city she lives in. My mother still plays piano. I mean, everybody's still, my other sister does singing and performing. It's just kind of in our blood, and I think it's always been there, and it doesn't go away. Even when I stepped away for 4 or 5 years to get work in television because my schedule just wouldn't allow it, I still thought about it, you know. And then, like I said, you still write songs in your head, especially if you're a creator and not just an imitator. And it's no offense to the people who don't know how to write. There are great players that never write. But
sure.
I am one that writes, and I can't stop. So I just retain these ideas and eventually use them down the road. And that's kind of how a lot of stuff's come about for me. But I always spend time making sure what we put out is feels right. You know, everything we do is what we like, and what we feel we want to put out there, and it's not being dictated by anybody. So.
And when you're not working on music, are there hobbies that you enjoy besides music in your spare time?
I do love to hike. I used to scuba dive a lot, and I haven't done that in a while, mostly because I live in the Midwest. Gets cold a lot, but, you know, I work so much, and, you know, I still work in TV. I work at a TV station in Chicago, and I've been there for 23 years, but the music's always been there. I work freelance, so whenever I need to take time off to go tour, I can do that, and I still have a job to come back to. And that was one of the things too. I think, you know, maybe because, you know, one of the only way to be successful, I think, the older you get as a musician, is to at least have some way and some trade that you've always got to go back to. Because realistically, it's just like anything. You get movie stars that go 3-4 years without a movie contract, and you have to figure out how to make it work. And musicians, it's no different. You may have a sell point for 10, 20 years, and then all of a sudden, bam. I mean, look at what happened to Kate Bush with Stranger Things and that song making her song go number one again after, what, 30, 40 years?
Yeah.
It's crazy. And she was smart because she owns her rights. She owns the music. She owns her recording. And she's the one that's retaining all that again. I think it's amazing. You know, that you can have that kind of resurgence. Look at what happened with Metallica as well. With that, just getting your stuff even heard on a TV show now. That's why, you know, when people say, oh, so-and-so sold out, it's like, did they really? They would have sold out if maybe they had done that 40 years ago. But I think at this point in their life, give them a break.
You know?
I mean, everybody's up in arms, I'm sure, about Kiss selling their entire catalog to a Swedish company. But if they're seriously done touring, why does it matter? They're
right.
Still living on in some form or another. And that was the point. They created something people liked. Let it ride, you know. If they made the decision and they're good with it, why should anybody else have a problem with it?
And I'd be the first to say to anyone who had a problem with it or felt a certain way about it, would you want to turn down a $300 million payday?
No.
You know. Exactly.
I mean, the thing is that they're all good thinkers, but they've done their time. I think they can live comfortably and have a good life. And I don't think they need to be shameful or anything about what they did. I think what they did was outstanding. I'll be honest with you. That's one band I can't believe I've never seen live. Just strange that I haven't, but
they were my first live show.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mine was Iron Maiden.
Wow.
Yeah.
What tour was it, by the way?
Somewhere on tour. Somewhere in time.
First time I seen them, one of the best concerts. I still brag about to this day. I seen them, the Number of the Beast tour, open up for Priest, the Screaming for Vengeance tour.
Ooh. Yeah.
Both those bands were firing all cylinders.
Yes. Yes, they were. I mean, they were the big ones, you know, that really set the mark. And then you have bands like Queensryche when Rage for Order came out. When I've heard Walk in the Shadows, I was like, oh, what do we got here? You know, bands like Rush, you know, I think it was a great time for a lot of that metal to be coming out. I loved it, every bit of it.
I wanted to ask you as well, what is the best way to get merchandise and physical copy of the album?
We do have our distribution everywhere, you know, so we should be, you know, if you search the record Sacred Dawn Dismal Swamp, it'll pop up on Amazon, CD Universe, all these places, and then maybe in some brick and mortar stores as well. Or they can go to sacreddawn.net and click on a link that'll take you to the Qumran Records. So Qumran Records is it's direct to me because I own the label. QUMRANRecords.com, and digital downloads are on obviously Spotify and, you know, YouTube. We can be assessed anywhere, but as far as physical hard copies of the record, you can buy them direct from me through Qumran, or like I said, you know, do your search on Amazon or wherever you prefer to buy from.
I think physical copy is, to me, the best way to go, because I'm being old school. I love being immersed in the album artwork.
Yeah.
And all the extras that come along with the physical copy.
I'm the same way. Every weekend, my wife and I will start turning the records and just let it roll throughout the day and work around the house. But we got vinyl playing in here a lot. I prefer it. And then, you know, you set up the record on the display as you see it walking around. It's just a cool thing. I agree. And, you know, with our record, we wanted to obviously be cool and trendy. So we did a dark translucent green vinyl, and it's a nice 160 gram weight. So it's nice and heavy. And we do all our pressings with Smash Plastic out of Chicago, which they do fantastic work.
And lastly, I wanted to ask you, if you could give a message to your fans, what would that message be?
To what bands?
To your fans.
Oh, to fans. Well, you know, we're Sacred Dawn. We're back after a little hiatus, and we're not going to be turning around anytime soon. I think we got a lot more in us. We're back to the original lineup, with Brad and John, and Vega's been in the picture the whole time, and we're excited. We can't wait to get out there and start playing more shows. We just played a show with Flotsam and Jetsam this past Monday in Chicago. We got some more coming up we're going to be announcing, but look out for us. Stay in touch with us. We do respond to people if they message us. We're on Facebook, Instagram. So thank you for whatever support we've gotten, and if you haven't heard of us, please check us out.
And I wanted to take a moment to thank you for creating an album I enjoyed from top to bottom. It is very hard for me to determine two tracks to discuss.
Oh, well, that's good. That's good. Thank you for enjoying it. That's the whole point. So,
well, thank you, my friend. And you have a great rest of your day.
All right. You do the same.
All right. Cheers.
Rock on.